session number 24658, Reel 3.
Mrs. Daphne Brown, and this is Reel 3. Yes, if I could ask you a little more about ENSA. You were saying you had this 6-week contract that you had to do with them a year.
Yes. The one that I remember most of all, which I've told you about, was the Phyllis Monkman show, which went on for weeks. And that was absolutely wonderful. And somehow I remember everything about it. I also remember everything about the 6 weeks that I did with Lulu Dukes when we were taking the place of Anne Shelton. But apart from that, I can't really. I know that I should, because little sort of snippets come into my mind. I mean, I can remember all weird things, like... But it wasn't sort of part of it. It was, for instance, I remember over a Christmas period being asked to stay on to a party by the CEO or whatever he was. And I hadn't told them that I wasn't going back to my digs. And then I was sent to Coventry and they were going to report me to Drury Lane for misbehaving. But of course I hadn't been misbehaving at all. So that was part of ENSA. And that obviously was a show in a very famous Air Force station near to London. But I can't sort of remember what I was doing, although actually it probably was part of the Phyllis Monkman show. I can't remember the other 6 weeks for... through the war. No, I can't.
The other thing I was wondering about, you know, when one hears wartime music and Glenn Miller, did that make much of an... Did it influence?
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, really, it did. I mean, that was great. I mean, all the big bands in those days we used to go crazy about, yes, and dance to them and... Oh, loved them, and if there was a film on, I'd go and see it, and then if I'd probably go alone, and I'd sit through until the bitter end, and I'd see it 2 or 3 times more, you know? Oh, yes, the music was those big bands were very, very important, and still are to me, still are. I don't think anything in this modern day has touched them.
You mentioned Anne Shelton. Was she a very important singer during the war, would you think, regarding the troops? Did you get any idea of who the popular singers were?
Well, it was either Vera Lynn or Anne Shelton, and all the what I call the band leaders, the English band leaders of that day, if they had a choice, they would always vote Anne Shelton. They always thought that Anne Shelton had far more talent than Vera Lynn. Whether it applied to the troops, that I can't say. I can't really say. But I think that she was very popular. And, of course, she did a lot of radio work as well.
So I don't know. Anne Shelton.
Yes, I don't quite know what her wartime record was.
It would seem from what you've been saying that... Your performances were much more sort of the mainstream, you know, the reviews,
yes.
what would have taken place anyway,
yes.
Wartime or,
yes.
or not.
Yes, I think
wartime.
So.
Is that
I
right?
think so. And I think that a lot of these letters that I'm telling you about that I've got in my scrapbook, they're all because after the show, I used to go back to the mess and sing to the boys, you see. And that was and they loved that. That was good. One got sort of closer to them, you know.
Were there any particular songs that they asked for that they liked?
Oh, Begin the Begin. That's about the only one that I can really remember. But I always begin the begin. Yes. Other than that, I can't think of any. There must have been many, but that's the one that stands out in my mind.
Well, were you known as a Cochrane girl during this sort of period?
Do you know
the fact that you... No.
No, because I wasn't. I was... this was the last... this was the last show that Cochrane did, of course. Well, not quite, was it? He then went on to do, I think, Bless the Bride after that. But this was the last... I think this... Big, what was it called? Big Top? Was more or less the last Cochrane show. So I think that the Cochrane young ladies had more or less faded by that time. But we did call ourselves Cochrane young ladies, you know. Sort of, but,
yes, was it an important name, Cochrane, in show business?
Absolutely. Cochrane young... Oh, my goodness, yes. This was, in a way, if you like, before my time. If you could say that you were a Cochrane young lady, you were the tops, you know. People would run after you. Marvellous.
So, after the war, then, could I ask you, you know, what your next sort of move was?
I don't know, I can't remember the audition... But I then went into CSCU, and I was sent out to Hamburg, and I got there, and my introduction to Hamburg was to see two old ladies going through the dustbin looking for food. And I was very sensitive, and I just said to the person next to me, I said, it's no good, I can't bear it, I'm not putting up with this, I shall have to go home. And this man said to me, oh, come along, Daphne, you will get used to it, you know, you get used to anything, and you will get used to it, which of course was absolutely true, because the stench was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And the piles of what could only have been bodies, but they were sort of covered over, I suppose. But and what was so incredible about Germany is that you couldn't say to anybody, would you... I'm trying to get to so-and-so. Would it be the second to the right or the second to the left? There were no rights or lefts. The propaganda in this country was negligible. We were not told how badly we had bombed Germany. So when you just got out there and saw it and saw that it didn't exist, it really was frightening. Frightening. It was, I think I said it once before, it was like H.G. Wells' Things to Come. It was horrendous. But, you see, as somebody said, you get used to everything. Eventually, you put up with anything.
This must have been very soon after the end of the war, then, when you went.
Yes, yes. I think I was one of the first ones into Hamburg, really, after the war. And then I went... I was in a little show to begin with, and then when that came to an end, they said, would you stay on and play Principal Boy in Aladdin? And I was only too delighted. I love pantomime, and I love playing Principal Boy. So, yes, that was gorgeous. And we had one coach that was full of German orchestra. The full German orchestra in one coach, and then us, and one or two of the boys, call up boys or whatever, came and played various bits and pieces in the pantomime. But it was good. It was a good it was a good pantomime. I can tell you, it was good. And we went all over Germany. I mean, apart from Hamburg. We went everywhere, wherever you ask, I'm sure we went, you know, apart from... of course, there were zones in those days, weren't there? And, of course, we didn't go into the American zone, I'm pretty certain. And there was a Russian zone. I remember when I was in Vienna. Vienna? Yes, I mean Vienna. And I wandered one day, because I was always a great one for wandering off and walking miles. And I found myself in the Russian quarter. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to be murdered. And I saw a man up a ladder, and I thought, oh, he'll come down and he'll kill me. But, of course, he didn't. I think he spoke to me somewhere. But I did eventually get back. But I enjoyed my time in Germany. And, of course, I got to know, what do they call it, the radio people in Hamburg, you know, I was sort of interviewed by them, and I nearly married one of them, Jimmy Kingsbury. Does that mean anything? No, you don't know those sort of people. Of course, what's his name? Alan knows them well and knows who I mean when I talk about Jimmy Kingsbury. Mm-hmm. He was an absolute heartthrob, really. But...
You resisted him.
I resisted him. Oh, do you know, how stupid can you be? You're talking about your daughter, and I'm full of admiration, you see, and I think to myself, my God, I'm not like that at all, because when Jimmy, we sort of thought we'd get married. Oh, he was gorgeous, and he was going to be demobbed, and he was coming back to London, and I wanted to meet him from the station. And he didn't want me to, because he said, well, I shall be all dirty and everything, and I want to clean up a bit. And I thought to myself afterwards, if only he'd let me see him dirty, it would have been a different world today. Because what he did was, in the meantime, he grew a moustache, and he had a rolled umbrella, and spats, and a demob suit. And he came down, and I mean, he wasn't the same person. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I can't marry that. I loved the rough old Jimmy, you know. Oh, so, well, how stupid can you be? You see, so that was the end of that. And I'm sure he went off and married somebody else and was thoroughly happy. But there you are. Oh, dear, dear.
Yes, I think a lot of women were shocked when they saw, you know, the servicemen in their civilian clothes.
Yes, yes, of course, he was also in uniform, of course, as well. And then suddenly this dreadful demob suit, of course. Yes, but how stupid can you be? I mean, really, that I'm ashamed of that. I'd have had a different life, of course, and probably it wouldn't have been such a good one, but I'm really...
But perhaps the spats were revealing.
Oh, well.
But your shows, who were the audiences in Germany when you were taking Aladdin about? Would they have been mainly the service people?
Yes, mainly. And then for matinees, we used to play to the German children. And, of course... I think we were pretty nice people, you know, and we used to have food for them and bananas. They'd never seen a banana in their life, you know, and the shrieks and the screams and the laughter. It was wonderful, really wonderful. There used to be something. I think pantomime has changed today, and I think there was something so good about pantomime in those days. It really was a family thing with no dirt or anything like that, you know. And
Have been in tights, I imagine.
Yes.
Showing your legs.
Of course. I had very good legs, if I say so. Yes. Dear, dear. Yes, that was a good time. I enjoyed it. Oh, I haven't told you. Apart from all the monstrous things, we lived in a brothel, you see. So I'd never been in a brothel in my life, and I didn't know it was a brothel to begin with, because I'd never seen so many mirrors, you see. Everywhere you looked, there were mirrors. The ceiling was a mirror. All the walls were mirrors, and so quite beautiful, quite beautiful. And next door, right next door, was the police station, which I thought was very... Nobody took any notice at all, you know. But we used to play in all the wonderful theatres, all the opera houses, you can just imagine, you know. No guides, huts for us or anything. We were playing today, I suppose some of those theatres maybe still stand. So we were playing in all those wonderful theatres. Yes, it was...
And it was German musicians,
yes, German musicians, and good musicians too, of course, yes. But I went to see an opera, I love opera, and it was a Mozart opera that I knew so well, and this particular woman was playing the Countess in Figaro, and she was out of tune the whole way through, and somebody told me, of course, they weren't getting the food. So they couldn't keep up a role because they were so underfed, you know, which was very sad.
Yes, in your travels around, you know, you've described Hamburg so well. Were there other cities like it? Other places?
Everywhere. Düsseldorf was just the same. Anyway, I can't even... Minden, Wuppertal. We didn't... Munich wasn't in our zone, but Cologne wasn't in our zone. But wherever else... and Celle. There was a wonderful place called Celle. And I reckon I was poisoned in Celle. I think we had a cook there who didn't like us, so we thought that she was slowly poisoning us. So we gave up eating when we were there.
I think Celle is near Bergen-Belsen. Did you see anything of the Count?
I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go, personally. The others did. I just couldn't face it. No, I couldn't face that. No. No. And then we went to... we took the show to Vienna. And, of course, the railways... You only went about 2 miles an hour on the rail because they'd been bombed to such an extent that they never expected a train to stay on the rails. So it took you hours to get anywhere. So that was my thing. Well, then I sort of came back to England. And I suppose now, of course, all the Joyce Grenfell, the Laurier Lister at Donald Swan, all those shows started, you see. And really... although I was in most of them, I wasn't happy. I'm not a review artist. I'm far more a situation person, you know. All these subtle little sketches and things really were not my cup of tea. And I don't think Joyce Grenfell liked me very much. I'll tell you a bitchy story about Joyce Grenfell. Now, this will show you another side of her, because everybody will tell you she's lovely. I told you about this friend of mine who was the concert pianist, and Albert Ferber, and he was giving a recital at the Wigmore Hall. And, of course, he knew Richard Ansell very well, because Albert had been the first one to play the Warsaw Concerto. And, of course, Ansell was a great friend of Joyce Grenfell. So they walked into the foyer, and I was there. I was waiting to go, all alone, I was waiting to go in. And so Joyce comes up and says to me, hello, Daphne. She said, what are you doing here? As if I had no business to be there. And I said, well, I live with Albert Ferber, you see. So that's why I'm here, because I know him so well. Oh, she said. What are you doing now? So I said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm not doing anything, Joyce, and I'm seriously thinking of giving the theatre up. Oh, Daphne, she said, have you ever thought that the theatre might give you up first? And I just thought, you know, here's this woman that everybody thinks is so beautiful and kind and gentle, and there was a side to her that wasn't quite so nice, you know. I don't think she liked me. I came to that conclusion that she didn't like me.
That seems about right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, was there much of that in the theatre? I think the bitchiness.
No, I didn't find it. I think I've told you that the things that happened at Burke with that equity thing. One other thing with Beatrice Lilly. Now, I was very young, and I was in this show. This was the Cochrane show, wasn't it? Yes. And so I was sitting in there were boxes on the stage, and I was in a box with Beatrice Lilly, and there was Madge Elliott and Cyril Richard and Fred Emney and somebody else. And I was so proud to be sitting in the same box as Beatrice Lilly, you know. Wonderful, right? Great big star. I'm playing with her and everything. So I went to my fitting one day, and I'd been given a rather splendid white dress to befitting a sort of very early 20-year-old. And so when I came to try the dress on, it wasn't white at all, and it was a hideous sort of satin thing with a great big orchids there. A woman of 50 would have worn it, you know. And so I said to them, oh, this isn't my dress. No, this isn't mine. Mine is white. So she said, I'm sorry, Miss Barrett. She said, but Miss Lilly has phoned up to say that we've got to change it because she wants the light to come onto her all the time. She doesn't want it detracted by a white dress. So that was that. And then the Joyce Grenfell one. And no, I didn't come across it very much. But I wasn't a particularly envious person in the theatre, you know. I didn't envy people. So it wasn't really until I gave the theatre up that I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, they talk about the theatre, but can't people be bitchy in business, you know? Men, I couldn't believe that men could be so as bitchy as that. That was that. So all the reviews, there was sort of... and then, of course, I did a lot of... You know, those reviews were very small, very small cast. And one did a lot of understudying. There is another story about Joyce. There, I told you that I loved costume work. And there were two numbers that she did. One was Come Into the Garden, Maud. I mean, that might have been Donald's, I don't know. But that I could do. And also there was another number, and they were just up my street. And she fell ill just before this particular number. And I went on, and again, I stopped the show. I brought them. And wonderful, they were so kind to me. And then, of course, Joyce was a, what do you call it, do you say Christian Scientist? They don't believe in medicine, is that right? And between, this was a matinee, and between the shows, I've never seen so many doctors in her dressing room, all bringing her voice back, you see, so that I shouldn't go on again, you know. And it came back, she was lucky, it came back. But other than that, I think people are very nice on the whole.
What sort of pay would you have been getting at that time?
Dreadful. Oh, dreadful, dreadful, dreadful. But money has never... my sister will tell you, money has never meant anything to me in my life. And I'm not going to remember, but I've never had money. So that means that... quite ridiculous. I mean, something like 15 pounds a week. And, of course, if you were sick, you didn't get paid. So that's why, if you had bronchitis, you see, you used to struggle on because you needed the money. No, money was terrible. Terrible. It's only now, isn't it? It's only now that it's sort of come to these vast amounts. See, I don't suppose Donald, I don't suppose they would have got all that amount, you know, particularly with Laurie Alister, who's so mean. Mind you, maybe there wasn't any money there, but... So that was that. Mm. That was Penny Plain, Oranges and Lemons, and then Airs on a Shoestring, which was at the Royal Court at in Sloane Square. And that went on for well over a year. And that was good. That was a lovely review.
Yes, what were you doing in that?
Well, we all did the same thing. We all do sketches, you know, and that sort of thing. You know, you do everything. You act, you dance, you comedy, tragedy, the lot, if you're in those sort of reviews.
You went to Malaya at some stage.
Oh, well, then I gave the theatre... Are you interested in that? I gave the theatre up. I thought it was time to give it up. I thought that... I thought there must be a life outside the theatre. And so... I went, and I don't know whether it was the WI or whatever it was, but I went, I saw an advertisement in the Daily Telegraph, and no money, I mean, sort of £5 a week, and bed and breakfast or whatever, board and lodging. And so I went, and there was the Duchess of so-and-so and Lady so-and-so. There were just two at that time. And I went in, and... I suppose I look back and I think, I'm an old lady now and I think I can sort of be honest about things. I think that I probably was quite attractive at that age. I was still a redhead and still had a good figure. And I went in and I was obvious for the job. It was to help run these entertainment centres in Hamburg, if you like, or wherever, you know. And so they started asking me questions, and I thought, these women don't like me. And so I think it was Lady Redding who was the head of this organisation. So anyway, I was told to go out, you see, and I saw Lady Redding, and she was lovely. She was a big lady, and I said, they don't like me, you know. I shan't get the job. They don't like me. Oh, she said, oh. So, anyway, I didn't get the job, and it upset me so much because I thought, well, I'm getting no money for this, and what good am I? They don't want me, and this is a voluntary organisation. So that was that. So then somebody told me about the Red Cross. So I went to Grosvenor Crescent with the most terrible cold. I used to get awful colds in those days, and I was all snuffly and everything. And I arrived at the door of Grosvenor Crescent. There was a dear, twitty little lady, rather like one of those Hollywood characters. And come in, Miss Peretz, come in. And that was that, you see. So I went into this room, and there was the Duchess of this, and Lady so-and-so, and this, that, and the other. And then there was a general smoking his pipe. And they asked me questions, and stupid questions. And I thought, they don't like me. And then suddenly, I hated them. And one woman said, the one question was, can you stand the sight of blood? And I thought, well, what a ridiculous question. So I said, well, I suppose I can stand it as well as anybody else. Oh, there'll be a lot of blood around, you know.